This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
As Eric B. and Rakim play us in, what's up? G&D here on The Fan. We're live at City Tap House, Penn Quarter. Joe Matarik, I'll be here in one moment. Quickly want to remind you, this radio program right here, that's G&D. We're exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condor and Morad that can help you draft your last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. All of our Caps playoff coverage is brought to you by Ace Trim Carpentry. For over 25 years, Ace Trim has been a trusted partner for new home builders in the DMV, specializing in full-service interior trim carpentry. We handle everything from supply to installation, turnkey, and hassle-free. Contact us at acetrim.com today. Ace Trim, the home builder's trade partner. We jump to the hotline, talk to our buddy, Monty Miller Sports, Tarik El-Bashir. Tarik, good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Always a pleasure, my friend. So we kick the show off with this, and I want you to argue both sides for me, right? So let's start off with the negative first before we get to the dessert, the deliciousness. Why is it going to be the same tonight? Why won't it go well for the Capitals?
Yeah, that's a good question. Here's what I would say. The Carolina Hurricanes play hockey one way. They don't have multiple game plans. They do one thing, and they do it better than everyone else. And every opponent knows what they're going to do. And the only way to beat it is to out-execute them. And the Caps didn't do that in game one. And so if they struggle in that area or in those areas, again, it'll be a similar outcome, a similarly frustrating outcome for the Capitals because it's the same thing. And you simply have to be better and you have to be more crisp and more determined than Carolina or you're going to end up with another L.
So there's the flip side here, Tarik. Why will it be different than it was the other night?
Because the Capitals are one of the best teams in the league at self-evaluation, at making adjustments on the fly, at making self-corrections inside games, inside weeks, inside losing streaks. They have a very smart head coach. They have very savvy veterans. There's no way to really measure this, but I would say the Capitals have a pretty high collective hockey IQ. And that's why this season, Danny, you didn't see a whole lot of long losing streaks. They had a couple of pickups at the end of the season, but that was a team that didn't have a whole lot to play for. They were a very resilient bunch, and it's not because they got that, oh, let's turn it around, boys. Like, they're just a smart hockey team with good coaching, and so they went to school on what didn't work for them in game one, and I expect them to have some answers tonight.
Looks like Taylor Radish is going to replace Ryan Leonard in the lineup. Give us the reason why.
Yeah, I would say both players have struggled with turnovers in this playoff season, Montreal series, and in game. Taylor didn't play this last game. I mean, Taylor had a turnover in, I believe it was game five, Montreal, that tossed the team. Taylor is more. even though he does turn the puck over, he is more reliable at this point in his career trajectory in his own end. And that is what you need when you've lost game one at home in the second round of the playoffs. What the coach wants is veteran presence, veteran reliability. You know what you're going to get from him. I think Ryan probably brings a little bit more at the offensive end right now. That said, he's 20 years old. And a lot is being asked of him, going from Boston College a month ago into the second round of the playoffs against Carolina. So I agree with the move. I think at this stage you need someone who's got some track record, has been in the league a number of years, and can play with a little bit more poise than a rookie who only got a handful of regular season games in there. But Ryan Leonard is going to be a good player on this team and in this league for a dozen or more years. His time is going to come. That said, when you're up against it the way the Capitals are tonight, you want someone who's really predictable and reliable and has been there and done it.
Tarik El-Bashir with us here on G&D. Other line tweaks, anything else different that we're going to see tonight, or is it roll the pucks back out?
Yeah, I do think we're going to see some other changes. I wish I could tell you, but the way the Capitals operate between games and the playoffs, and even really all season long, is they don't run their lines in the morning skates. And I'll tell you one thing about Coach Carberry that I really admire. I feel like last year, as a rookie head coach, he was a little bit too much of an open book when it came to answering questions about lineup and other things, particularly when they got into the postseason. This year, he has learned his lesson and keeps that information to himself. As I saw a tweet a few weeks ago from Jared Bednar, the longtime coach of the Colorado Avalanche, and someone said, was asking him about the lineup ahead of a playoff game, and his response was, "Why would I tell you who's going to be in the lineup and who's going to be playing with whom? What does that do for me? What's in it for me?" And sure enough, I mean, if you can force the other team to wonder about your lineup for an extra 5-10 minutes, then you've done your job. So we'll find out, during warm-up who's skating with whom. I would imagine that there'll be some other tweaks in addition to what we expect with Leonard coming out and Radish going in, but I think there'll be some movement in those 12 forwards and maybe even on the D.
What do you think the tone was like in the dressing room for these guys after that game one loss? Coach Carb's post game was a little more short than he usually is.
He
was curt. He was not your typical, very springy and fun Coach Carberry. What do you think his message was to the team going into game two?
I would imagine the message is, okay, boys, we had quite possibly our worst game of the playoffs in game one. Some of that had to do with what Carolina did to us. That said, it was one game. It's the first team to 4 wins. There's potential of 7 games. Forget what happened in game one. Let's go out and execute what we talked about after we lost game one. And we'll be right back in this. We'll go down to Carolina, where we've had success in the past, and bring the series back with a lead. I'll tell you this. Having talked to a number of players and Coach Carberry the last 36 hours, there's no panic. There's no one freaking out. It's one game, and that's really been the overarching theme is, we won the Eastern Conference for a reason. We're a good hockey team. We're not going to allow one game to drag us down.
Tarik El-Bashir with us here on G&D live from City Tap and Penn Quarter. You mentioned what Carolina did, and kind of this is always such a hard thing, Tarik, when we're here in D.C., obviously thinking from D.C.'s perspective, right? Whenever any team plays, it's Washington did this or didn't do this and X, Y, Z. And I'm kind of going, yes, there's some passes that you missed. There's some scoring opportunities you didn't score on. That's kind of hockey. But to me, I think we're overlooking how much of an influence Carolina had on how Washington played, if that makes sense. I think they're the catalyst. How much of that in your mind is that push and pull where Carolina deserves some credit for forcing the Caps into some uncomfortable play? Like, how much credit do they deserve that maybe we're not giving them?
Danny, you're exactly right. It's funny. Professional athletes are trained after losses to go, well, that wasn't what they did to us. We weren't good enough. But when you're kind of an unbiased outside observer and you watch what happened, and I was just talking to someone about this a few minutes ago, a lot of what happened was the fact that Carolina came in with the same game plan they have played all of these years under Rod Brind'Amour. I mean, when I tell you guys, they are possibly the most predictable team of the 32 teams in the NHL. You know exactly what they're going to do. Their goal is to fling every single puck at the net when they have an opportunity, as evidenced by their 96 attempts on net, which is an absurd number. And it's to keep you pinned in your own end and to make you feel like you're drowning, to make it feel like you're underwater, to make it feel like you can't breathe. And what they do is they keep you pinned in your own end. They fling pucks from the boards, from the blue lines, whenever. LP makes a save, it kicks out to the corner, they go and retrieve that, and they do it all over again. And you're stuck in your own end for 30, 40 seconds, and they're doing it for so long sometimes, they're changing players. They are literally bringing fresh players onto the ice, and you're still stuck in your own end. And the goal is to, after make you feel like you're drowning and that your legs are burning and you can't catch your breath and you're under stress and duress and you're under pressure, is to eventually make you break. And whether that break is a rebound that turns into a goal, whether that's a turnover because you're physically tired or you're mentally stressed and you make a play that maybe you shouldn't have made and it turns into a turnover and it ends up in the back of the net, that is their goal. It is torture. Sometimes, if you're a hockey purist, I would say not only is Carolina one of the most predictable teams to play, like they're not a whole lot of fun to watch. Like it's not beautiful hockey. It's kind of ugly hockey, but it's effective hockey. And so the Capitals' challenge tonight, for me, it begins with breaking the puck out more cleanly so they're not spending the whole night in their own end. Because when you're in your own end, when you're defending for, you know, minutes on end, not only are you getting tired, playing defense is hard. It's not a whole lot of fun. You're also being struck by puck. Like, it's just, there's nothing easy about the way last game went. And so the Capitals, their primary focus is going to be getting the puck out of their own end, getting through the neutral zone, which is also tough against the Hurricanes, and then getting the puck into the offensive end and then hanging on to the puck a little bit, making them play a little bit of defense, making Freddie Anderson make a save. And so it's easier said than done. That said, guys, these teams played four times in the regular season. The Capitals won two. The Hurricanes won two. The Hurricanes are not infallible. The Capitals know how to beat them. They just have to go out and do it.
Talking with Tarik El-Bashir here on Grant and Danny. Toby Altizer in for Grant Paulson today. I mean, maybe you just alluded to it, but what kind of adjustments do you think they need to make going into game two? Because, like you said, they're predictable. You know what was going to happen, so it's not as if they had game one something totally different thrown at them and they weren't ready, but is the adjustment maybe just play better?
Yeah, I mean, that's the easy answer. Yeah. And I think you're right. I mean, you know, if you do talk, I did talk to the players after game one. And again, to Danny's point, a lot of what happened was what Carolina was doing. But at the same time, the Capitals weren't quite as sharp as they have been at times this season. I felt like a lot of their breakout passes were off the mark. I felt like other puck touches, other puck decisions weren't the right reads, and those turned into turnovers or prevented them from advancing the puck either out of their own end or through the neutral zone. They got to be smarter. They got to be crisper. They got to be more dialed in, more focused. And again, like I said at the beginning of this, guys, there is a reason the Capitals won the Eastern Conference, why they didn't have 1- and 2-game losing streaks become 3- and 4 quite very often this season, because they are very good at self-evaluating, self-scouting, and then turning things around.
Tarik, who's got to play really well tonight? I mean, Logan Thompson, I think, is kind of a given. I thought he played really well in game number one. But among the skaters, whether it's defensemen, forwards, et cetera, yeah, who's got to do a little bit more than they did in game one?
Yeah, I think if you ask Coach Garber, he was like, I need more from everyone. You know, a number of guys, I guess, stood out to me. And, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois has been awesome this season. Really good at both ends of the rink. He had a tough time in game one. I'd like to see him drive his line a little bit better at both ends of the rink. You know, I something tells me they're going to shake up the defense pairing potentially tonight. No one really stood out to me as having a poor game, but no one was really good back there either. If you look at the way the Capitals play, the secret for them to have a long postseason run, and you did mention it there, and you kind of said you can't pick him, but I'm going to pick him anyway. Logan Thompson just makes up for so many of the mistakes a team can make. And when your goaltending is playing at an elite level the way LT is right now, that can really propel your team far in the postseason. So I think if the Capitals can get, you know, 5, 6, 7 guys to play a lot better than they did in game one, and you get another elite top-level performance from LT, they get a win tonight. They put the pressure back on Carolina. And if they can get one down there in Raleigh, you know, and the Caps, I don't want to look too far ahead. I feel like this is their toughest matchup. They can get out of this round. And LT is playing the way he is right now, where he is probably the best goaltender left in this tournament. This could be a pretty magical spring. But it begins with game two, right?
Yeah, historically, you know, this team has struggled coming off of some extra rest. And I think the big thing for me coming into game one, they just weren't very sharp. They were right there, but there was just some lacking sharpness. Do you think we see a sharper team tonight now that they're back in more of a rhythm, having played 2 days ago?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something Tom Wilson talked about this morning. He did feel like everyone was just a tick off, just a little bit off, whether it was compete level on the boards, whether it was passes, whether it was reads, whatever it was, he felt like everyone except for LT was just a little bit off. And so I do think you're going to see a sharper, more dialed in team. And again, you know, like I said, I think the collective hockey IQ of this team is really high, and they have high expectations for themselves. I asked Coach Carberry this morning, I said, you know, what was the vibe the last 36 hours? He said, well, this morning it felt like a very serious tone. Like the guys know that this is, to this point in the postseason, the most important juncture of their season. Like, they have to get a win tonight to have a chance at moving on, because Carolina has been one of the best teams in the league at home on the, you know, at the Lenovo Center. So the Capitals are, it's one game, so you don't want to feel like you're backed against the corner or backed into a corner. But that said, they know they have to put their best foot forward tonight, and they've done it time and again this season, so I have no reason to believe it'll be different.
Turk, thank you as always, buddy. Enjoy tonight.
Thanks, man.
Give me a call anytime.
You got it, buddy. We will see you soon. And there goes Turk Kupcher. And that's how we do Little Caps hockey playoff preview situation. The esteemed gentleman to my left, that's Tobias Funke Altizer, brought to my attention a very dramatic, very serious, very in-depth article by the worldwide leader in sports about missing pieces, potentially,
sure,
on the Washington 53. We will discuss what's still missing as rosters are kind of starting to settle post-draft, post-original round of free agency. We'll talk about that group, the local 53, here in a moment, plus our double play at 3:45, Beltway Blitz at 4. No reason to navigate anywhere else. G&D here on The Fan.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Oh, it's premature there, Darius. That's my bad. You heard Tobes in the update just now? Mentioned the NBA playoff series. So I'm putting kids to bed last night. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's like you're running around. It's a fire drill. So the one's in the bath. One's you're running around supposed to be brushing his teeth, and he's naked. And it's like, could you both put some clothes on and brush your teeth? He's like, well, which one? I'm like, all of it. Just hurry up and do it. No talk back, whatever. And the baby's screaming. Anyway, the whole point is it's a hot mess. When I went upstairs to start doing that, I think Boston was up 18. I think I got that number. Maybe it was 16. And I'm going, okay, they, as the young people say, they clapped back. Is that right?
Sure, yes.
Or is that more verbal?
A little more verbal. Yeah.
Well, they responded. And I come back downstairs, and here's Jason Tatum with the ball down one. And I watch the last sequence play out. I'm going, oh, my God, I cannot believe it. Yet here we are, Knicks up 2-0 on the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean – can you imagine being a Boston Celtics fan? I don't know a lot of Celtics fans personally, but could you imagine what the feeling
Okay, hold on. I'm trying to make myself insufferable. Yeah, I got it. Go ahead. Yep.
I can't imagine the feeling when, you know, think of a Lakers fan when Kobe had the ball to end a game, or when Bulls fans had Jordan with the ball in his hands at the end of the game. How do Celtics fans feel when they're down by one and Jason Tatum has the ball in his hands? Not very confident, right?
All of a sudden, right?
Not great. Because he's a really good player. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, it's great, but yeah.
The fact that he didn't win finals MVP last year, that was Jaylen Brown, and all the stuff that happened in the summer with the gold medal and him not even getting playing time for Steve Kerr and the Team USA, I mean, it's crazy. And I don't know. He's just never clutch, it feels like.
So it's so weird. I mean, because
he's such a good player to not be clutch.
He's such a great player. And what's so funny is it's in the wake. It was only a month ago where the worldwide leaders, they're trying to find something to yell at each other about on the shouty shows. And I remember somebody was doing this like blind resume challenge. I can't remember who it was. If it was, you know, Stephen A. or Kendrick Perkins or who knows. But anyway, the point was, like, why aren't we talking about Jason Tatum as one of the greats? Because of look at this, look at this, look at this, look at this, look at the pace he's on, this championship and this All-NBA and this caliber thing and these numbers. Here are the people in history that have done that. It's like the best of the best. Why doesn't he get that consideration? And I remember being like, oh, maybe there's something to that. Like, is he underrated somehow? And now all of a sudden, it's not fair these last two games to be able to kind of go, but a little bit of,
yeah, it's funny because when you do these elite NBA conversations, mm-hmm. you're talking like, okay, who are the best players? You're like, okay, you got Jokic, Giannis, SGA. And they're like, oh, yeah, Jason Tatum. Oh, yeah, Is he though?
Like, someone goes, don't forget about Tatum. And you're like seven.
Really? Yeah. Is he though? Because he's a really good player, but it's like the big time moment. You need him, and he just doesn't do it. Like you watch on the other side in the other series in Game One, Jokic. He's an incredible player. They had no shot against the Thunder, and all of a sudden they find a way, and they're in it because of Joker. That's not the case with Tatum. He doesn't ever do that.
Doesn't feel that way. But anyway, there's some intrigue all of a sudden with the playoffs and the association. And I know it bothers some people when, you know, one team will get off to a massive lead or be up 15, 16, 20, and the other team comes back. But to me, that's kind of part of it. It's why you can't turn the game off. It's why, you know, a 4-0 game in hockey is the equivalent of like 100-0 in basketball. But because of the three-point shot, because of the shot clock, teams get hot, teams get cold. It takes a turnover, takes a couple runs. Next thing you know, you got a totally different ballgame. Just ask the Boston Celtics about that. But, Tobes, you brought this to my attention here. The worldwide leader, speaking to them, did a little teeny tiny breakdown, kind of post-draft, post-first round of free agency, what every team is missing. And they had a curious answer for Washington that upon further review actually makes sense to me. But break it down for folks.
Yeah, so they go with linebacker depth here for what they're talking about, the biggest position of need. And I think it's interesting because most people would probably immediately say edge rusher.
Well, that's the first thing that comes to mind, right?
And when you look at their linebacker depth, you're looking at Frankie Louvu, and he kind of is a tweener to me, right? He's more edge rusher than linebacker. But regardless, Frankie Louvu, Bobby Wagner. But then behind him, you're looking at Dominique Hampton, who is a fringe safety linebacker type. You got Jordan McGee, and then they drafted Kay Medrano. And the problem for the couple of those guys is Dominique Hampton and Kay Medrano are like those hybrid linebacker safety types that are drafted late that aren't thought to be true Mike linebackers. And Jordan McGee, I think they like as a potential middle linebacker of the future, but he was hurt most of last year.
Yeah, but what do we know?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So they're in an interesting spot where there's not veteran depth behind it, where this team has seemed to be able to build things where even if they don't have a high upside, they have a high floor. And behind Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu, they don't really have that right now.
And I think when you look at it, at first I go, linebacker depth? This team plays two linebackers at most, right, in a conventional sense, because you touched on it. Louvu is more of a on running downs, they think a run's coming. He's a linebacker. He's off ball. But for the most part, now when it's time to drop back and pass, if it's second and seven or above, he's probably rushing the passer. And I don't think of him as a linebacker anymore. I think of him as a defensive weapon. But bear with me. It makes sense. This is, again, another byproduct. I know maybe folks are tired of the broken record here. But another byproduct of the unbelievably inept and ridiculous 4 years of faulty, terrible player acquisition by Ron Rivera and company. Now, there are a couple names in, you know, on this team of guys that were still, you know, that were there then that are there now. And that's totally true. Guys have blossomed into something. Like Quan Martin is a good example, one of their couple of victories. Or, you know, you could point to a rotational defensive player or something. But to me, this is where when you don't have any kind of a hit rate, where that next guy has done something. I mean, this is not a great analogy or a great example, but I think back to linebacker spot. Speaking of that one, there were years where, you know, it's Antonio Pierce, and then are we sure that Keenan Robinson can take over? The answer is yes, and then the next guy, and the next guy. You're having some development. Now, I'm hoping that Jordan McGee is a thing, but if Jordan McGee was ready to rock and roll, would you have felt more comfortable letting Bobby Wagner go? No, I would have re-signed Wagner, A, because I don't know about McGee, but B, because I'm such a Wagner guy. I think what he meant was more than just a couple tackles here and there. But you need heir apparents unless you're going to spend a premium resource. And to me, that's not a premium resource position. I'm talking about linebacker. And I know that's out of vogue with some folks here because they were so tired of people not spending the linebacker spot at all. I'm not saying don't spend. I'm saying I don't want a first-round middle linebacker. I don't want a first-round off-ball linebacker. Now, if you got a first-round Micah Parsons, let's have a conversation. But I don't want your conventional Jamin Davis as a borderline first or second rounder. I have no interest in that with a high resource allocation.
It's kind of the running back of the defense, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's you can still find some value, and if you get a good one, then you're still going to find a lot of use. I mean, look at Zach Bond did to the defense of the Eagles last year, and then they decided to pay him. Look at what Fred Warner's done for years. But at the same point, I think you're right that you don't necessarily want to spend premium resources. The issue I have behind this is what was the big issue with their defense last year, Danny? Stopping the run, right? And Bobby Wagner is 6 foot 241. Okay. That's what he's listed at. The other guys behind him that we talked about, the young guys, K. Cade Medrano, who they just drafted, 6'3", 230. He's the biggest of the behind them three. Jordan McGee, 6'3", 226. And Dominique Hampton, 6'3", 220. They're more those speed, pass coverage linebackers.
Which in general is what I love.
I do like that. But if you can't stuff the run, which was their biggest issue last year, because I think one thing that we talk edge about what they need. I think they looked at it and said, if we have to choose one group to upgrade, which one are we going to do? Corner or secondary help? Or if we're going to go pass rush, they'd opted for secondary. And I actually like the point because I can probably make a better pass rush than I can make a better secondary. So if I have
meaning create one with scheme?
Correct. Yeah. So like if I have a good secondary, I can find a way to get some pass rush. Versus if I have good edge rushers and I can scheme some stuff up, but I still can't cover anything, then that doesn't matter. So I think they've gone that route. And so I think when you look now at this, though, they need to be able to stop the run because they've got a decent secondary on paper right now. And the guys behind Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu, if one of those guys were to go down, I don't think are going to be very good run stuffers.
Okay, so I like a lot of what you're saying there. I'm just sort of workshopping this as you're talking. I think the easiest, and I put that in quotes, just in terms of the least amount right you have to be. If you have a couple of star pass rushers, that's the easiest way to have a good pass defense. Right?
Sure.
You follow me?
Sure.
So that means you're dictating to the offense. You can't double team everybody. You got to be super cognizant of this defensive end or this pass rusher from the middle, whatever, right? That's the easiest thing to do. The problem is they make five of those guys in the world at any given time. Mm-hmm. And the guy that you thought was one ain't one anymore. I mean, see Hall of Famer Von Miller, not the same dude. He's a free agent. You know, if you told me, you know, how many years ago, Von Miller's going to be a free agent, I go, oh, my God, never stop spending until that guy's here. That's not who he is anymore. And it's no insult to Von Miller. Again, gold jacket. So short of that, I think the next way is what you're talking about, where you go, I'm going to Voltron. That's a reference from before your time. You're way too young. Voltron was five lions driven by teenagers that would turn into one giant robot that had a blazing sword that could cut through anything. The Robies, okay? Don't get me started on the Robies. I hate them. I hate them still. Don't talk about Prince Ixor either. All right. So anyway, you're going to Voltron a pass rush with Greg Williams style scheme, this zone dog blitz, this fake blitz, these stunts, these TE games and things like that, and you can't manufacture coverage. You can excel in coverage to sort of help everybody work in symbiosis. If you don't have those elite pass rushers, you don't just spend on a name, you spend on upgrading that secondary, which they've done. They brought in Lattimore, a high cost item, both in terms of money and in terms of draft picks. They drafted someone pretty high, a second rounder. They went and spent on Jonathan Jones, who's not a world beater, but has started and probably can start, has some versatility. So all of a sudden, you're trying to upgrade your secondary because you go, this is a tangible way for us to sort of stop the pass. We needed to improve against the run. Our pass rush is a work in progress, but that's what it is. We're going to have to sort of create this thing out of a lab.
Yeah, and I think when they look at it too, you would have liked more pass rush last year, but they had a guy finish with 10.5 sacks, or what was the number that Fowler had? He finished with double-digit sacks, and Dante Fowler wasn't thought to be anything. They picked him up off the trash heap. So I think they can manufacture it. I think the way that they're different is when you look at when Jack Del Rio was here, he needed those elite guys up front because he was basically rushing four most of the time, and he wasn't going to get a pass rush because he wasn't going to try to manufacture it. I think regardless, Micah Parsons, whoever, had Micah Parsons in Dallas. Yep. They still blitzed a lot. They were still really aggressive because that's their scheme. So I think they look at it and say, if we can get one, great. But if we can't, let's build up the secondary because we're going to find a way to get pressure on the quarterback regardless because we can scheme it. So I think they're going to try that, different waves of guys and bringing corners and doing all the different things that they do. I think that's the style of defense they want to play. Plus, you need guys because Jack Del Rio is going to play more zone and do all this stuff. I think in their ideal world, they're going to play single high. They're going to play press man, and they're going to bring pressure on the quarterback. You can't just have Nubs corner on both sides and expect to be able to play press man because that just doesn't work.
Corner, yeah. I mean, and Grant and I disagree about this all the time, just fundamentally. It obviously helps to have great football players in any position. I'm not telling you it doesn't. But to me, I have so much experience in my lifetime with kind of the guy, just a dude who does exactly what he's supposed to do on defense and having a pretty good defense. You're better if you've got a world leader. Duh. I've used his name a couple times. I'd rather have Reggie White than Dietrich Wise, right? Both in their primes. That's obvious. But I've got too much in my history here as a Washington fan where – if you just play your responsibility, you can have a pretty decent defense. You don't have to be a world beater or a superstar, et cetera. And I saw a lot of that, again, kind of that Greg Williams corollary. Offense to me is one where I go, I want those uncheckable monsters. I want a matchup that is so terrifying that the defense has a choice. Either get beat by that guy or dedicate every single resource to stopping that guy. And, you know, Grant has always kind of felt the opposite. I think that's fine. But here, in this case, I don't know how many dudes they have. I think Luvu's a dude, but not in a way that if you just have him be a pass rusher, he would do what Parsons does. Right. In other words, if every passing down, Lou was no longer a linebacker with linebacker responsibilities, he's just going to rush the passer. I don't think he has a 15 sack season in him. That's just not who he is. And that's okay, by the way. He's got a lot of use, and he was an 8 sack guy last year. I think if you turn that fader all the way up, he's a 9, 9.5 sack guy, right? Where you forgo any kind of pass coverage type responsibility, or say, you know, damn the torpedoes, I'm betting on a pass here, on a pass blitz. You know, if they run by me, so be it. I just don't know where the rest of that pass rush is going to come from without a lot of creativity.
Yeah, I think it's going to be on DQ and Joe Witt to find a way to get that pass rush. I think that's what they're – but I think they like that challenge because I think that's what they really like is being able to have a solid coverage unit and then they can figure out how to get a pass rush. But to your point, I mean, it'd be a lot easier if you have a dude and they just don't have those guys. I think the big thing, though, is if you're not going to have dudes that can't play the pass, you better have dudes that can play the run. And so hopefully Dorrance Armstrong is better against
the
run.
Theme, right?
Exactly. And so hopefully Dietrich Wise and these guys that they brought in, Javon Kinlaw, we haven't talked about, like hopefully those sorts of dudes, even though some of these guys historically haven't done well against the run, if you can at least play well against the run, I can find a way to manufacture pass rush. But if you can't stop the run and you're not a skilled pass rusher, then you're kind of in a bad spot.
That's Toby. He's in for GP, who's out with the strip. I'm Danny Ruhier. This is Grant and Danny here on the Fan. We're live at City Tap House in Penn Quarter before the Caps game. Come on by and see us. This place, quite simply, rules. I love it here. It's coming up next, our double play. Now, what's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Then the Beltway Blitz at 4. And I got some poll data I want to ask you guys about. It has to do with folks in the district responding very favorably to a hot item in the sporting news world. Double play when we come back in 5 minutes on The Fan.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
G&D here on The Fan at 4 o'clock. Not only is it time for your Beltway Blitz, but it's time for DC Defenders tickets. They're taking on Arlington this weekend. I had to look that up. It's not like Arlington. Mm-hmm. It's not like a DC versus Clarendon game or like Ballston, Arlington.
That'd be pretty fun, though.
An all-star game. Would that be fun? I think I'd go to that.
Yeah, why not?
Just to see. It's like DC guys versus Arlington dude bros.
I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, it's like JMU versus, you know, whoever's living in the city.
Yeah.
I'm all about that. 4 o'clock Beltway Blitz, as I mentioned. We're live at City Tap House in Penn Quarter. I love this place. Come on by right before you go to the Caps game. It'll be a hoot. Great food, beverages galore. It is an awesome, awesome spot. We do this every day at 3:45. Throw something called the double play. It's what's going on in our lives. Nothing to do with sports.
So I was at the Nationals game the other day. They had a true doubleheader. What day was that, Tuesday?
Was that Tuesday?
I think it was Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday.
They had a true doubleheader. And so game two, which, by the way, grounds crews getting that stuff ready is just insane for a second game. But has nothing to do with sports, right? Brad Lord starts warming up to start the second game. And he's playing this song, and I can't get it out of my head. is White Horse by Chris Stapleton.
Okay.
And I'm not a country music fan, but I'm kind of listening to a little more country music, Danny.
For a guy that's not a country fan, it sounds like you're listening to some country.
I'm not a country music guy, but I'm listening to that. I've listened to White Horse like 6 times in the last 12 hours because I can't get it out of my head. I had to figure out what song it was.
And how does that one go? I'm not doing a bit. I'm not trying to do can you sing it? I actually don't know. Which one's that?
It's a good song.
We're Toby talking. Humming is so true, right?
Well, I didn't want to sing it. I didn't want to sing it.
Why is my underwear coming out?
But regardless, like I thought, I think we got it here.
Was it?
This is a good song.
It's a little intro here. Is this the part that Brad Lord plays? Like that dude's voice is incredible.
This is such a good pitcher warm-up song, by the way. And so I can't get this song out of my head. I've listened to it like 6 times the last 12 hours.
How come? Like it just gets stuck.
What do they say? Like it scratches that itch. Mm. Like that's what it does for me. It's
you
just
got
perfect.
A favor. It happens to me sometimes where random things in my life, like my I'm not just saying it flippantly. My ADD brain, I've got it. You guys can probably tell if you've ever listened to me talk for 7 seconds.
Really?
Yeah. What was I talking about? Oh yeah, my ADD brain. Well, one of the things, and I've learned so much about this over the years, it's not just that I have a hard time paying attention to stuff I don't care about. It's a million manifestations. And one of them is this weird, this fires in your brain, which causes this and this and this. It's this weird zigzag of memories. So something will happen. Like I'll see a pothole and I'll be like, oh, men are working, men at work, land down under. I wish to land down under.
I'll have to
listen to that song. Like I get these little trips all the time. So I haven't had that for that song specifically, but there was a week this past month where like every time I got in the car, like I had to put on I think it was like Money Talks by AC/DC just because I had like paid a bill.
Nice.
You know what I mean? Like it's that sort of like weird thing that happens to me. So I totally get that where it's like now it's in your head and now you need to hear it to scratch the itch.
I've heard it nonstop in my head. So I've listened to it on the way home last night with some other country music, which again, not a country guy, but Post Malone's doing a little country now. I like a little bit of that.
He's gotten to the point where he can do whatever he wants.
He's so good. That's such a great voice. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm into right now. Listen to a lot of White Horse by Chris Stapleton.
Darius, if you have a moment, could you hit that sounder for the double play, please? Danny Ruggier, Disney Plus show review time. We are 9 episodes in to Andor. This show is excellent. It is so, so good. Now, I know a lot of folks roll their eyes when they hear about anything that has to do with Disney and Star Wars. I get it. Believe me, I understand. I think if you throw out everything, you miss gems like this. So, Andor, I don't know how deep a Star Wars guy you are, Tobes.
I've seen him.
I think you're not really a Star Wars guy, which is totally fine. Actually, it's not. If it's wrong, you should just fix that and just watch all the Star Wars things. But I know Ryan isn't because it's a movie. And anyway, the point of the dude's story is, so one of the things that Star Wars a lot of times will get caught up in is they feel like they've got to do another re-exploration or another redefining of the Jedi and the Sith and the Force and the light and the dark. They always feel like they've got to do that. So one of the main reasons the Acolyte failed, I think so miserably, in my opinion, was just an incorrect, weird take on the Jedi as this like nanny state, weird police force with no value structure, lying to each other. They were totally inept. It's almost like they've got this preternatural ability that they just sort of turn down to zero. It's like, you've got the Force. They're like, how do we get there without a guide? The Force. You use the Force like every Jedi in the history of mankind. And they're just neutered and they stick, right? So every once in a while, the beauty of the Star Wars universe, the universe of Lord of the Rings, the universe to a degree of Game of Thrones is the history, the panoramic, and the world building is so elaborate, so excellent, so well created that all we're doing is getting a small viewfinder into a period of years. But you know that if you tuned in 10 years ago, 1,000 years ago, you'd see something equally as compelling. And that's the beauty of these worlds that have been created. So Star Trek, I think, gets a little bit of that too. Andor capitalizes correctly on moving away from the mysticism of the Force, moving away from all of this Jedi. Can you pass the trial and become the Jedi that you were meant to be? And we lose this person to the dark side. It's just people. It's just people. And the whole political backdrop of the show is the Empire tightening its grip and the spark in the beginning of the rebellion. and it is brilliant. It is masterful. You've got three distinct, separate, integral characters that we all have known, because this is kind of a prequel and it's a leading up to sort of a telling of the story, where they're all doing things independently and you can see how they're merging. And they juggle the three balls in the air masterfully. It's like the way the Game of Thrones did for the first, you know, 5-6 seasons. The way some of the best shows that you can remember were always able to do that, to have these separate tracks that they would ultimately bring together. 9 episodes into this second season. It's different than the first, but it's still wonderfully done. It is incredibly well acted, so well written. The sets, the backdrops, everything is beautiful. This show, if you care about Star Wars at all, is a must watch.
What's your favorite Star Wars movie?
Empire Strikes Back. What else you got for me? I think it's the best of the three movies. So one of the things that, you know, the Wars obviously matters more than almost any movie ever, honestly. I mean, it's up there in terms of – no, I'm not even being flippant. We don't have films made – the way that they're made without Star Wars, right? The practical effects, the world of Industrial Light and Magic, sound effects, the different things that we now have come to take for granted. It was amateur hour with puppets. Star Wars happens, and now you have this future. And literally, so it's up there with, maybe in terms of quality for someone, that's fine, but it's up there with The Godfather. It's up there with Citizen Kane. It's up there with On the Waterfront. Any kind of movie that you would want where you go, how influential was this thing? That's up there. So you can never replicate that. But Empire, directed by Irvin Kershner, where Lucas himself takes the largest back seat, to me is the best film of the original trilogy.
Can I give you two sleeper characters that I really like in Star Wars?
I'll allow it.
And they're selfish. I like Obi-Wan Kenobi. I always tweeted out on May the 4th, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That stings a little bit, Tobes.
And then I have Rey. I like Rey because I think Daisy Ridley's incredibly talented.
You
also,
she's a good actress.
I think she's very good. And Rey is spelled R-E-Y, like my middle name. So selfishly, I'm in the Star Wars, whatever you want to call it, universe, a couple times.
Your name would be like Rey Tobaltizer, like your Star Wars name.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. I'd buy that. But Andor, to me, I'm not sure where I'm going to give it the full ranking. Once the season's done, I'll give you my carbohydrates rating. We're north of an 8, though. I'll tell you that.
Very good.
This show rules. It's really, really well done, and I love it. So again, if you like Star Wars, you will dig this program. 5 minutes from now, Beltway Blitz and your chance to win DC Defenders tickets. It's Grant and Danny here on The Fan.